Here, Touchstone Pictures presents, in association with Touchwood Pacific Partners 1, a Sandy Gallen production. Now, champagne fills the screen. Tiny bubbles rise upward through the amber liquid in delicate trails. More titles. A Nancy Myers and Charles Shyer film. Steve Martin. In Father of the Bride. With Diane Keaton. Kimberly Williams. George Newbern. Kieran Culkin. B.D. Wong. Peter Michael Getz. Kate McGregor Stewart. And Martin Short. Executive producers Sandy Gallen and James Orr and Jim Cruikshank. Co-producer Cindy Williams. Casting by Donna Isaacson. Music by Alan Silvestri. Costume designer Susan Becker. Film editor Richard Marks. Production designer Sandy Veneziano. Director of photography John Lindley. Produced by Nancy Myers, Carol Baum, and Howard Rosenman. Screenplay by Francis Goodrich, Albert Hackett, Nancy Myers, and Charles Shyer. Directed by Charles Shyer. Our view pulls away from the glass of bubbling champagne and drifts past the scattered remains of a reception. A strand of pearls entangled with white tooling. A half-filled glass. Pink roses lying slightly wilted on their sides. And small figurines of a bride and groom. Candles burn low. A wedding invitation stands half open against three slender champagne glasses. A bouquet of lilies and roses lies on its side, tied with a strand of pearls. Now we skim over a floor littered with confetti, flower petals, and napkins. A handsome, tuxedoed, silver-haired man in his late 40s hunches in a chair. He takes off a shoe, massages his foot, and smiles wincingly at us.
I used to think a wedding was a simple affair. Boy and girl meet, they fall in love, he buys a ring, she buys a dress, they say I do.
He leans forward.
I was wrong. That's getting married. A wedding is an entirely different proposition. I know. I've just been through one. Not my own. My daughter's. Annie Banks McKenzie. That's her married name. McKenzie.
He shakes confetti from his shoe.
I'll be honest with you. When I bought this house 17 years ago, it cost less than this blessed event in which Annie Banks became Annie Banks McKenzie. I'm told that one day I'll look back on all of this with great affection and nostalgia. I hope so. You fathers will understand. You have a little girl. An adorable little girl who looks up to you and adores you in a way you could never have imagined. I remember how her little hand used to fit inside mine. How she used to love to sit on my lap and lean her head against my chest. She said I was her hero. Then the day comes when she wants to get her ears pierced and wants you to drop her off a block before the movie theater. Next thing you know, she's wearing eyeshadow and high heels. From that moment on, you're in a constant state of panic. You worry about her going out with the wrong kind of guys, the kind of guys who only want one thing. And you know exactly what that one thing is because it's the same thing you wanted when you were their age.
He sips champagne.
Then she gets a little older, and you quit worrying about her meeting the wrong guy. And you worry about her meeting the right guy. And that's the biggest fear of all, because then you lose her. And before you know it, you're sitting all alone in a big empty house wearing rice on your tux, wondering what happened to your life. It was just 6 months ago that it happened here. Just 6 months ago that the storm broke. Annie had been studying for her master's in architecture for the past semester in Rome. I remember I was at work walking through the factory. I own a company called Sidekicks. We manufacture athletic shoes. Anyway, I remember how preoccupied I was that day.
Sorry, Mr. Banks.
My fault, Grace. Annie had never been that far away from home, and she was due back any minute. I couldn't wait to see the kid.
a secretary in a glassed-in second-floor office.
George, she landed.
My daughter has been studying abroad, been flying for 11 hours. I'm not wild about her being in the air. You have kids, Juan, you understand. It's better when they're on the ground.
George dodges rolling racks of shoes and bounds upstairs.
I've always been a concerned parent. I'm big on car seats, seat belts, bedtimes, curfews, calling when you get somewhere, never running with a sharp object.
Hi, George.
What can I say? I'm a father. Worrying comes with the territory.
Is Nina picking her up at the airport?
Yeah.
And you're
going to
meet him?
Yeah, I'm going home right now.
In his office, he fumbles for his keys.
Oh. Here. And sign this.
Okay.
The secretary holds out a clipboard.
Okay.
He dons a red baseball cap, then rushes back for two boxes and his attaché case.
Bye.
I left work early because I had a little something to pick up for Annie's homecoming.
He parks outside a bike store.
We live in a small town in Southern California called San Marino. I love this town, and not just because it's the kind of place where people still smile at each other, but because it hasn't changed much in the past 25 years. And since I'm not a guy who's big on change, this town fits me like a glove.
He drives a classic Austin Healey convertible onto a maple-lined street.
I got Annie's 10-speed all cleaned up and polished. New seats, new tires. I couldn't wait to show it to her.
He pulls into the driveway of a large white house.
This is our house, 24 Maple Drive. Annie was just in grammar school when we bought it. A few years later, we got a surprise package. Our son, Matt. I love this house. I love that I taught my kids to ride their bikes in the driveway. I love that I slept with them in tents in the backyard. I love that we carved our initials in the tree out front. This house is warm in the winter, cool in the summer, and looks spectacular with Christmas lights. It's a great house, and I never want to move. But the thing I think I like best about this house are the voices I hear when I walk through the door.
Hey, uh-huh.
Hi.
Got out early.
Where is she?
Oh, she's unpacking. She looks so fabulous, just fabulous. Different. Anyway, she can't wait to see you.
Different?
Ciao, Papa.
Hey.
Annie brought me this candy bar all the way from home.
Let's not get it on our American furniture.
Maddie, the high tops.
Maddie catches the shoebox.
Hey, grazie.
Hey, you're welcome. What do you mean different?
Oh.
Wearing a short black dress, Annie gazes downstairs. George's stunned stare melts.
Annie.
Hi, Dad.
Annie slides down the railing. Beaming, she throws her arms around George's neck.
God, I missed you.
You look all lit up inside.
I feel all lit up inside.
Maybe we should go to Rome for a few months, huh?
Oh, you two would love it. It's the most romantic place on earth.
You smell pretty good, too.
Oh, you like it? It's a present.
Doesn't she look incredible? I almost didn't recognize her. Come on, dinner's on the stove. Honey, you want some?
Nina leads the pretty, curly-haired Annie away. George squints. His brow creases into a frown. Later, at the dinner table.
All right. Now that we're all back under one roof, we have some very important items to discuss. First on the list, who wants to go to the Laker game on Thursday?
Oh. Me. Definitely, yes.
Okay, and with your busy schedule, too.
Honey, I can't. I have inventory to do that night.
Oh.
Thursday, sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
Maddie, could you use your fork?
Mm.
Number two. Paul Simon is coming to the Forum, and I think I can get us great seats.
Oh.
Yeah, sure.
All right, Paul Simon's an yeah, sure, which I believe translates to a yes.
Annie nods tentatively.
Okay.
Hi. Could you please get that bottle of wine in the fridge for me?
Sure.
Dad, wait, I don't know.
You don't want to see Paul Simon?
No, I do. It's just,
What is it?
Well...
Is something going on?
Yes. Yeah, it is, Mom. God, this is a hard thing to tell parents. Especially when they're my parents. Oh, God.
Honey, just say it. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
Okay. I met somebody in Rome. He's an American. He's from L.A., actually. And, his name's Brian McKenzie. And he's this completely wonderful, wonderful, amazing man. And, well, we started seeing each other a lot. And, we fell in love. It actually happened. And, we've decided to get married, which means that
what?
I'm engaged. I'm engaged. I'm getting married.
George stops chewing.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Oh, my, my. Oh, so, oh, my. And that's your engagement ring, huh?
Yes, yes. We got it at a flea market outside of Rome. The guy we bought it from said it was at least 100 years old.
Wow.
So, Dad, stop it. Say something.
George snaps out of a daze.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Dad, I met a man in Rome, and he's wonderful and brilliant, and we're getting married.
George sees Annie as a 7-year-old.
Mom, what's he doing?
George. George, what is it?
He breaks into a smile.
Well, this is ridiculous. You're too young to get married.
Too young? Dad, I'm 22. If I'm not mistaken, that's a year older than Mom was when you guys got married.
That is absolutely not true.
Oh, no, you're absolutely wrong.
You were this age when I married you?
No, I was younger. I was this age when she was born.
That doesn't matter. Times have changed. Your mother was mature, and 22 isn't what it used to be. Would you turn on the air conditioner? It's hot. I thought you didn't believe in marriage. I thought it meant that a woman lost her identity. I thought you wanted to get a job before you settled down so you could earn money and be your own person.
All right, hold on. I didn't think I believed in marriage until I met Brian. And Brian's not like any other guy I've ever known. I want to be married to him. And I'm not going to lose my identity with him because he's not some overpowering macho guy. He's like you, Dad. Except he's brilliant. He happens to love the fact that I want to be an architect. He wants me to design a house for us to live in. He said he'd move anywhere I got a job. Give me a little credit, George. I'm not going to marry some ape who wants me to wear go-go boots and an apron. I'm telling you, you'll love him. He's a genius. And sweet. And I love him more than anything in the world.
George stares at the table.
What does Brian do?
Who's Brian? I forgot his name.
He's an independent communications consultant.
Independent?
Yes.
No, that's code for unemployed. Well, this is perfect. You meet an unemployed, amazingly brilliant non-ape that I'm going to have to support. I suppose I'm going to have to hire him and fire some hard-working guy with 3 kids because my son-in-law, the independent communications consultant, can't get a job anywhere else. I wonder he'll move anywhere you get a job. You're not getting married, and that's it, and that's final. And I don't like you calling me George. I mean, when did this start?
Daddy, what is wrong with you?
Annie storms out. Maddie presses his lips together. Nina gapes at her husband.
What? You're telling me you're happy about this?
George, please, will you stop acting like a lunatic father and go out and talk to her before she runs out that door, marries this kid, and we never see her again?
All right. Kid, how do you know he's a kid? He could be 45 years old.
Nina responds with a warning glare. Maddie shakes his head. George leaves the room. Nina's uncompromising stare warms into a grin as she chuckles to herself. Outside, Annie hunches on a patio chair. George brings out a basketball.
An independent communications consultant does not mean he's an unemployable non-ape. Brian happens to be a computer genius. Companies send him all over the world hooking up these complex systems. Major banks and corporations send him to Tokyo and Brazil and Geneva. He's a genius.
You mentioned that. How old is this genius?
26. Not 45. You guys still think I can't hear you when you're 1 room away.
If you love him so much, I know I'll love him too.
Annie smiles, her pert face framed by chestnut brown hair. They embrace.
Brian.
Mackenzie.
Brian Mackenzie.
Yeah.
I can't wait to meet him.
Good, because he'll be here in an hour to meet you.
Suppose you're not in the mood for a little one-on-one?
Daddy, I'm wearing heels.
Come to the right place.
She catches the basketball. Later, in the driveway, wearing her black dress, pearls, and a pair of white high tops, Annie dribbles low, bounces the ball between George's legs, and sprints in for a layup. The ball falls through the rim and into George's hands as Annie taps out a victory dance. Later, she steals the ball off his dribble and makes another basket. Now, George whirls the ball around his waist and under one leg. He heaves it from behind his back into the hoop. George jumps for joy, then moonwalks backward and forward. Later, he calls timeout, then bolts toward the basket. He shoots and misses. Annie catches his rebound and scores. George shoots a jump shot over his daughter's head. It swishes in. He guards Annie closely. She fakes a drive to the left, then to the right. With her back to the basket, she throws the ball high over both of them. It drops in. Later, she fakes George into jumping, hits a long shot, and kisses her fingertips. Without dribbling, George runs to the hoop and puts in a finger roll. Annie calls traveling. George tries to dribble past her. She grabs his tie and yanks him back. George's wild shot bounces in. In slow motion, they walk past each other and slap a high five. Annie scores. They slap another high five. Sweating, George reaches for the ball. Smiling, Annie bites her lower lip and dribbles past him. He grabs her wrist and spins her. Grimacing, she manages a long one-arm toss. The ball soars high into the night air. George staggers as it rattles in. As they slap a high five, Annie whirls around and pumps her fists. They walk back toward the house, arm in arm.
You're not really getting married, are you?
Dad, stop.
Later, George peeks out a window as a red sports car pulls up in front of the house. Frowning, he squints from behind a lace curtain. Nina enters, sipping coffee.
So can you see him? What does he look like?
He just drove up.
And?
He drove too fast.
Nina sets down her cup. Hunching, George returns to the window. On the front walk, Brian straightens his tie and runs a hand nervously through his hair.
Well, wait. So, George, you want to meet him?
Do I want to meet him?
Brow furrowed, George peeks at Nina, who holds the front door half open, and waves George over.
Oh, hello. Hi.
Hi, I'm Brian McKenzie.
Good. I'm Nina Banks.
Yes, I recognize you from your picture.
Yes.
George rolls his eyes.
Yes, oh, good, come in.
Okay. Hello, Mr. Banks.
It was the first time I ever hated the sound of my own name.
Hi. I've heard so much about you. It's great to finally meet you, sir.
Sir, two words now crossed my mind. Brown and nose.
Annie talks about you so much, I feel like I already know you.
Brian...
Oh, Annie.
The bright-eyed, boyish Brian rushes into Annie's arms. They kiss closely. George can't bring himself to watch, then forces a smile.
So this is him.
Oh, he's just...
All nervous. It's like one of those situations you read about, you know, meeting the in-laws. But you two seem great. I'm sure I have nothing to be nervous about. But still...
Let's go into the...
I think he's adorable.
I don't like him.
Oh, George.
He's wearing Nikes.
Brian's sneakers peek out from under his pants.
Mom, where's Maddie?
Oh, he's all asleep watching TV.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you'll meet him tomorrow.
Okay. They sit in the living room.
So, how did you two, meet?
Oh... We were the only two people at this revival house in Rome for a midnight showing of Bringing Up Baby. We kept hearing each other laugh.
And at all the same places.
Yeah. When it was over, I picked him up.
Oh, no. I went over to you to ask directions, and then one thing led to another.
And that was it. For the next 3 months, we never left each other's sight. We went to all these museums, all these great concerts, the opera... Yeah.
George stares with horror at Brian's hand on Annie's knee.
With the, Suffice it to say, it was not a 4-star hotel. You have a very brave daughter.
Brian, what is it exactly that you do? Annie was saying something about computers.
I'm an independent communications consultant.
Yeah, that part I heard.
Sounds fake, right? Like it's not a real job?
No, we wouldn't say that, no.
That's what my dad said when he first heard what I was doing. But what it is, in this case, Pacific International Bank sent me to Rome to hook up the XDOT connection to their European subsidiary. All European computers communicate on the DOT-25 network. And since Pacific International is an LA-based firm, they wanted to interface with standard European protocol. So I set them up.
And why are you independent? What was that?
Because no one can afford to keep him on staff.
Well, that's true, basically.
He rubs Annie's knee. George glares.
Driving down here, I tried to put myself in your place. Your daughter comes home after spending 4 months in Rome, and I'm sure you couldn't wait to see her, and she shocks you with the news that she's getting married. And to somebody you've never met before. I'm sure that must have been pretty... heavy. To use a word from your generation. I just want to say that I'm an upstanding citizen. I've never been engaged before. I've never really been in love before. And I think Annie is the greatest person I've ever met. And I can't wait to marry her and one day have children. Mm-hmm. Grandchildren. And I'm going to do my best to be supportive of her dreams. And she's a very gifted architect. I'm just thrilled that I met her.
George fakes a smile.
I love your daughter. And the feelings that I have for her are never going to change.
Glassy-eyed, he squeezes Annie.
I'm here to stay.
George slouches, stupefied. Nina beams. Laughing and crying, Annie and Nina hug. Brian and George face each other awkwardly.
That's okay, Mr. Banks. We don't have to hug.
Maybe later.
No. Well, that was just the best thing I've ever heard anybody say.
Oh, well, I meant it.
Good.
Listen, I want to take Brian out for a drive somewhere on San Marino.
Okay, honey. Good.
Annie, it's a little nippy out. You might want to put on a sweater.
Dad, it's okay. I'm kind of warm.
So there's a chill in the air, and you've been on a plane.
Dad, I'm fine.
Annie, it is kind of cold out.
It is?
Yeah.
All right, thanks. I'll get my jacket.
Right then I realized my day had passed. She'll always love me, of course, but not in the same way. I was no longer the man in my little girl's life. I was like an old shoe, the kind we manufacture and get all excited about and then after a few years discontinue. That was me now. Mr. Discontinued.
Mom, don't wait up, okay? We might stop for a cappuccino.
Oh, okay, fine. Well, good night, Brian.
Good night. Good night, Mr. Banks.
Oh, you can call him George. Or Dad.
George will be fine.
Okay. I'll say it next time I see you.
And drive carefully. And don't forget to fasten your condom.
Dad!
Seatbelt! Amen. Amen. Seatbelt.
Yeah. I'm putting your father to bed. This has been a very big night for him.
Bye.
Well, yeah. Good night. Bye. Have fun.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Have fun. This is a great kid.
It'll never last.
What of Ed?
Nina, Annie's much too spirited for this kid. He's totally wrong for her. I give it 2 months, top. 1 month.
This is the right guy for Annie, George. I'm telling you, I feel it in my bones. I mean, we're two lucky parents.
Lucky? Oh, what about his laugh? It was such a giveaway. It was so phony with it.
I thought it was totally sincere.
Oh, please. What about that little rehearsed speech he gave? It was right out of a book, How to Grease Your Future Mother-in-Law.
You're off here, George, really. I thought it was completely from his heart. Why do you think I cried?
Good question. I don't know why either of you cried. I'm losing my voice. Are my glands swollen or something?
Let me see. No. No, honey, no.
What about the way he kept touching her?
What do you mean?
What do you mean, what do I mean? He couldn't keep his hands off.
Oh, yes. Kind of like when we were engaged, except that wasn't all you couldn't keep off me.
That was different. And we certainly never acted that way in your parents' house.
Ah! You want me to name all the rooms we did it in at my parents' house?
That was different. We were like two imbeciles. This is our child we're talking about.
Our child? Oh, George, you know, I still think you see Annie as a 7-year-old in pigtails.
Well, you know, that just shows how much you know about me, because that is not at all how I see her. Right, 7-year-old with pigtails. I mean, here's the thing. We have no idea who this Brian really is.
Oh, uh-huh.
I mean, if that's his real name, I mean, who knows? You know, maybe he already has a wife. You read about these cases every day. The men who have wives and families stashed all across the country. I mean, he could be a professional con artist uh-huh. who meets innocents abroad and gives them this song and dance about being an independent, whatever that was, and then skips out after bilking them for all they're worth. What are you doing?
I'm getting ready for bed.
You know, then I suppose you're not interested that I believe I remember seeing someone who looked like Brian's twin on America's Most Wanted.
You're right. I'm not.
George turns away.
George. George, I thought he was great. I liked him a lot. And I'm really happy. George, will you please stop making that face? I'm very happy for Annie. And I'm excited for her. This is a big deal. I think that we should at least hug. This is great news. Oh, wedding.
George hugs back weakly.
Father of the bride. Can you believe it?
She kisses him. Holding her tight, George rolls his eyes, then frowns. Daytime in their Jeep.
48 hours later, the wedding was still on, and we were on our way to Bel Air to meet Brian's folks. I don't know why we have to have brunch with total strangers.
Because their son is marrying our daughter, and it's not an unusual custom meeting the in-laws.
You know, that's another thing. I hate that expression, in-laws. What does it mean, anyway? We're legally bound to these people? I don't want to be in-laws. Especially the people who live in Bel Air. I mean, what kind of people have brunch and live in Bel Air?
Rich people.
They probably live in the one shack in the middle of all these mansions.
Nice mood, George.
What? I'm in a good mood.
They approach a manicured hedge.
Okay, I think this is it. Yeah. Nice shack, babe.
Worse. The biggest house on the street. Now we're related to pretentious snobs. Just what we need.
An iron security gate slides open automatically. They pull into a circular driveway, past a stone fish spouting water. Nina parks their Jeep Cherokee. Fuchsia blossoms cover one of the villa's cream-colored stucco walls. The banks get out. George's eyes bulge at the Mackenzie's mansion. They approach an enormous front door with a heavy black ring for a knocker.
You look very handsome, George. Wait till you be in-lawed.
Well, it really shouldn't matter how I look. We're not here to win their approval. Just because you changed your outfit 5 times.
Oh, and you didn't try 9 different shirts?
Two. Too long sleep, too short sleep.
George, hi. Nina, welcome. Hi.
Brian's parents embrace them.
I'm John.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hi, Joanna. Welcome.
Come in, please.
Come in. Thank you so much.
All I could think about was the size of this place.
I know that.
We could have parked our whole house in the foyer.
What a nerve-wracking thing, meeting your future in-laws. Yeah.
Oh.
What a relief, you two look perfectly normal.
Oh, well, I am. I have to tell you, we got so nervous about today, about meeting the two of you. I must have tried on 3 different outfits.
Oh.
I changed my shirt 4 times. Can you imagine anyone being that jerky?
Oh, no.
George lingers in the foyer, his smile evaporating.
Oh, great.
Martha.
Thank you, Martha.
A maid.
Estos son nuestros in-laws, George and Nina Banks.
Mucho gusto.
Hello.
Oh, and here's the rest of our family.
2 Dobermans and a bulldog.
Oh, don't worry. They look like killers, but they're actually quite friendly. As long as you're relaxed, why, they're relaxed.
Hi, puppy. How are you?
All right, fellas, that's enough. Come on. Release! Good boy.
Well, why don't we all sit down?
Please.
Oh, thank you.
All right, here we go. George. Honey,
sweetheart. I don't know if the kids told you, but we were over in Europe on business, and we stopped in Rome to see Brian. So we got to spend a few days with Annie. Oh, boy, we just fell in love with her immediately.
Isn't she great?
Yes, we just couldn't be happier about this.
How did you take the news, George?
Me? Truthfully, I was a little surprised.
I was shocked.
So was I.
After all, they'd only known each other a few months.
Exactly, and Annie's just finishing up school.
Absolutely. Oh, believe me, I tossed and turned over this one, but the bottom line is they're in love. They're over 21, and whether they're rushing into this or not, maybe not for us to say.
Right. Not for us to say. We're only their parents.
I was about to say these very words out loud when he hit me with...
Yeah, sooner or later you just have to let your kids go and hope you brought them up right.
John passes around glasses of champagne.
George? Nina? Darling?
This guy was making a little too much sense for me. Suddenly my shirt collar felt like it was starting to strangle me.
George sips.
To George and Nina.
And then spits it back.
And a future of wonderful memories. First, the wedding of our children. And the happiness we'll share watching their lives. Then, sharing the joy of our grandchildren together. Birthday parties. Graduation.
Choking back sobs, John swallows hard, lowers his gaze, and brings his glass solemnly to his lips.
Now I knew where they got the expression, like father, like son. I also knew I needed some air.
Can you tell me where the restroom is?
Oh, actually, the one down here is a mess we're remodeling. Why don't you try the one at the top of the stairs? It's the seventh door on the left.
Second?
Seventh.
Seventh.
Upstairs, George rubs his hands under the sink faucet. He towels off his hands, then notices an open mirror-faced cabinet. He shuts the mirror door, then pauses curiously. He reopens it and peeks inside. Glancing behind him, he reaches in and removes a bottle of prescription pills. He returns it and takes out another bottle. Reading its label, he grimaces with distaste. He half-heartedly checks a few smaller bottles, then closes the cabinet door. He notices another door on the other side of a large central mirror and pulls on its edge. It falls with no cabinet behind it. George catches it and tries to hang it back up. We see him wincing in the mirror's reflection. He puts the false cabinet back in place, then adjusts his suit jacket and smooths his tie. As he ambles toward the bathroom door, he notices an adjacent room. Head cocked with curiosity, he wanders into John's study. Gingerly, he approaches John's desk and flips through his Rolodex. He focuses on a red bank book emblazoned with the words First Security Bank. As he opens it, his eyes bulge. At the sound of Marta in the hallway, he ducks under the desk. One of the Dobermans waits, inches from George's face.
I'm leaving. I'm relaxed, and I'm leaving.
The dog bares its fangs. As George retreats on his hands and knees, he spies Marta leaving with some laundry. Still holding John's bank book, George stands and faces the two Dobermans. Palms raised, he steps back, a forced smile on his face. A large French window rests ajar behind him. A rose-covered trellis leads down to a garden below.
Relent!
Recoil!
One leaps toward him.
Well, I hope George hasn't gotten lost up there.
Oh, no, he's gonna be fine.
Nina spots George dangling from the trellis.
Such a lovely sculpture.
She points away from the window. George lowers himself, legs splayed.
Denmark. Oh, quite a lot of my family's from Copenhagen.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't have a wonderful sense of balance.
Oh, it's amazing.
I was going to put it in the garden.
As John turns to the window, George lands and sprints out of sight.
Well, actually,
Nina glances past John and sees George at the pool. George waves wildly, then realizes he's still holding the bank book.
Is that a fact?
George glances up at John's balcony, cringes, then throws the book. Oblivious, Marta walks out onto the balcony. The book bounces off the rug she's shaking and drops into the pool.
And we're planning a trip back next summer.
Right. I think this is a very beautiful spread here. Oh, thank you.
Well, should we wait for George?
With a desperate glance back at the house, George scurries around the pool. He grabs the tall edge of a solid stucco platform which borders one side of the pool, then reaches for the book. It floats just out of his reach. He climbs up onto the platform and balances uncertainly. Behind him, he sees a mesh pool cleaner shaped like an oversized fly swatter. He grabs it and holds it out as far as he can. The book drifts a few inches away.
Maybe I should check on George.
Outside, the Dobermans appear on either side of the pool's patio. Oblivious, George continues to fish for the bank book. The dogs race toward him. He glances up in panic. Nina's jaw drops. Arms pinwheeling, George teeters on the pool's edge. Drenched, George pops above water and winces a smile.
Wow,
Wow, no kidding.
Later, at dinner.
Really? It went great?
Better than great. I mean, it just couldn't have gone better.
God, I'm so relieved. I mean, who knows what can happen at these things, you know? Now I feel like the wedding's officially on. And Dad, that looks so great. This looks great.
Brian's mom called with the names of her immediate family.
Nina hands George a long piece of paper. Both sides are covered with names. He cocks an eyebrow.
Is this a joke?
Not only is it not a joke, but eight of them are from Copenhagen, and, well, it's the bride's family's responsibility to...
Do you have any idea what a round-trip ticket from Denmark costs?
Try eight round-trip tickets.
Well, actually, it's nine. You see, Joanna's cousin, Aoife, is apparently a rather large woman, so she needs two seats.
She can lop over into the aisle for all I care, because there's no way I'm...
Hi, everyone. Sorry I'm late.
Hi.
How you doing? Hi.
Hello.
Hey, dude.
Brian, with a bottle of wine.
Here you are.
Oh, well, thank you.
Let me talk. You're welcome in Danish.
Oh, thanks.
This looks great. Hear you're a whiz at the barbecue, Dad.
George turns a soured gaze to him.
Well, so have you two given any thought to what kind of wedding you want?
Well, we talked about it.
Yes, and what do you think? Big, small, or...
Well, it can't be too big. We don't have that many friends.
So we're talking in the small vicinity, then.
Well, no, she didn't say small. She said not too big.
Yeah, but nothing fancy or overblown, right?
Right.
Right. So kind of the less is more theory, huh?
Basically.
Now, the reason I'm asking all these questions is I have a great idea where we can have this lovely, not small, but not too big wedding.
You do? Mm-hmm. Where?
At our favorite restaurant. The place we've been eating at for 15 years. The best. The Steak Pit.
Dad, get serious.
I don't think about the word pit on a wedding invitation, George.
Really, Dad, a rib joint with sawdust on the floor isn't exactly what I had in mind for my wedding. No offense.
Well, excuse me, what did you have in mind, the Beverly Hills Hotel?
No, actually, what I'd like is to have my wedding in a church and have the reception here. That's what I was hoping for.
Here?
George turns toward the backyard. He imagines picnic tables, paper decorations, an accordion player, and himself in a chef's hat and apron.
Don't I have the greatest dad in the world?
Annie wears a wreath of flowers. Brian, khakis and a short-sleeved shirt.
Okay, here's your bride burger and your groom burger, and go on over there and see the juggler.
My dream wedding, a barbecue wedding.
Annie and Brian walk away with their hamburgers. George turns back to the dinner table. His eyes light up.
This is a better idea than the Steak Pit.
Yeah.
We'll get some picnic tables and crepe paper and balloons. You know, invite all our best pals. I'll make my famous guacamole. A wedding at home. This is a great idea.
Later.
Great idea. Picnic tables, crepe paper, balloons, you at the barbecue. Oh, George.
What don't you like about that?
Why have you been acting so crazy since the moment Annie told you she was getting married?
No, I haven't been acting crazy. I've simply acted like any normal, red-blooded American dad.
Normal? Uh-huh. Okay. Falling in the McKenzie's pool. Suggesting the Steak Pit as a wedding reception. Oh, watching America's Most Wanted every night, looking for Brian's face, and now this picnic scenario. George, a wedding is a big deal. Everybody seems to understand this but you, and as a matter of fact... Now, don't go nuts when I tell you this. But when Brian's mom called with her list, she suggested that they might just want to pitch in and help with the cost of the wedding.
No, hey, we may not have a house the size of Rhode Island, but we're not poverty-stricken. We can certainly afford to give our daughter a proper wedding.
Proper. Not you in a chef's hat, right, George?
Yeah. Who said anything about a chef's hat? When did
this
come?
Yes, but I know you. I'm close. Oh, look. I just really saw this whole thing differently. Like, I wanted to call a wedding coordinator to make the whole thing really, really beautiful, and you want to call Gabe at the Steak Pit.
Wait a minute. A wedding coordinator? What's a wedding coordinator?
A person who coordinates weddings.
What's to coordinate?
Well, there's the invitations and the flowers, the food, the band, the photographer. George, why are you giving me that look again? A lot of people hire wedding coordinators.
Nina, you and I run two successful businesses. We can certainly pull together one smallish wedding. Yeah, you know, we don't need some fancy wedding coordinator.
Okay, George, let's just forget it, okay? Because, you know, I just really can't take this. I'm not used to all this arguing. So
I don't want to argue.
Do me a favor, okay, George? Just go on upstairs and I'll finish up down here.
Upstairs. However, I would like to remind you what happened to what's-his-name down the street. His daughter got married and the thing practically broke him, remember?
I remember.
You and I could end up shuffling along the sidewalk in our bathrobes.
He peeks back downstairs.
That was a joke.
Hilarious.
Oh, all right, I'll go. I'll meet the wedding coordinator. You know I don't want to, but I'll go. If you still want me to go, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
A sunny day, downtown.
Now let me do the talking, girls, okay?
Uh-huh.
Well, I negotiate better than you. Now, what's this guy's name?
Frank. Oh, this is it.
They enter a boutique.
Okay, here we go. Oh, my, Annie. Look, what is this trim? These beautiful pearls.
The room is full of table settings, cakes, and flower arrangements.
Annie, do you like this place setting?
Oh, I do. That china also comes in a wonderful Sara Lee yellow.
Hi. You must be Frank?
I wish. I'm Frank's assistant, Howard Weinstein.
Well, I'm Nina Banks.
Hello.
And this is Annie.
Oh.
Hi.
You're the bride.
Hi.
And, George, my husband.
May I offer anyone any refreshments? Pellegrino, espresso, champagne?
Oh.
No.
I'll alert the boss that you're here. Look around. Have fun.
Oh.
Howard pats George's hand on his way out.
Annie?
Yeah.
Oh, wouldn't this be perfect for you?
Oh, it's gorgeous.
A thin, dapper man with a bouffant appears.
Master and Mrs. Banks and the lovely bride. Hello. Hello. I'm going to put a gap of your wedding. I'll frank a pleasure to meet you.
Oh, my.
Has this after yes, after the longer hope?
Oh, yes.
the bride.
Right away, I realized this was a mistake of gargantuan proportions. This guy was going to coordinate our wedding? How? With subtitles?
Okay, please come with me and we'll talk all about our big day. The big day for the bride. Papa, come in there.
Frank beckons George.
Oh, sit down. On my own design, I designed that very nice, I think. Now, so you have not made up your list yet, but you know that you want the wedding at home on January 6th, right?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Excuse me?
Yes, we would. We would like a wedding at home on January the 6th.
I love the weddings at the homes. They're very personable, very warm, and cozy, very fabulous. Oh, so January 6th, give us 7 months. Uh-oh, hello, that's 5 months. 5 months, not much. But that don't bother me so much because it's a little bit tight, but we can do it and it will be spectacular. I'll tell you, world, so I can don't worry about that. So now, let's see. This is what I suggest to. I suggest that we select the cake first.
Okay.
You know, because the cake very often determines what kind of wedding that you end up having. So let's just choose the cake, okay?
Okay.
Choose the what?
The cake, Dad.
Frank squeezes between George and Annie and flips through a cake photo album.
So this is a very popular cake with many of the fashionable weddings. You know, and this I just don't do anymore, and this is fabulous.
Oh, that is incredible. Annie, that's just like the one we saw in the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like it, Dad?
Well, what is that? Is that dollars? $1,200?
Beloved Master Banks, this is a very reasonable price for a cake of this magnitude.
A cake, Frank, is made of flour and water. My first car didn't cost $1,200.
Welcome to the 90s, Mr. Banks.
Not only did I not understand a syllable this guy was saying, now I had the feeling he was putting me down.
Excuse me, Aunt.
Mr.
Banks, could we please have a second?
Oh, of course, take 2 seconds. Howard, let's return calls. Could we...
Frank sashays out.
All right, George, what's the problem? Do you want to leave?
Do you?
No, I like him. I think he's going to make this a beautiful wedding.
Don't look at me. You guys decide.
Give the man a chance, George, please. Annie, do you like this cake?
It is incredible, Dad.
Well,
all right. But look, let's just...
We were going to, George. We're going to hold things down.
We won't go in the bar.
No.
Thank you. No. Frank.
Coming.
We'll take the cake.
Oh, good. Good. Don't worry, Mr. Bonds. I'm going to bring the crew over to the house. We'll give it everything that we have in the once-over department, and then at the end, you'll be very, very happy, trust me. You just smile away. Now, interesting idea.
Yes.
With regard to time and color of the wedding, this is how I see it. I think we go very elegant inside the tent, you know.
With one swift move, I'd been cut out of the deal. Annie, Nina, and Frank were in charge now.
And beautiful china, spoiled, and crystal to drop over dead for.
Old Dad was history.
New machine to work.
A few days later, I was at work. Relieved for once not to be talking about the wedding.
In George's factory, a traveling salesman shows watches, handbags, and dress shoes to a few workers.
I got a new shipment, beautiful merchandise, Gucci, Cartier, Louis Vuitton.
I never heard of Louis Vuitton.
He's big, darling. Believe me, or they wouldn't be knocking him off. Don't worry, Mr. Banks. They're on a break.
Maybe I could see those mock-ups by Friday today. Thanks.
This was the call I'd been dreading since the moment I heard the words wedding coordinator.
Hello?
Mr. Bob, this is Howard Weinstein, Frank's executive assistant. I have some it for you.
I can barely hear you.
I'm in my car going through Water Canyon. Call you back?
No. I want the estimate. How much? What's the damage?
For everything from the flowers to the honeymoon limo.
Okay, everything. How much?
$150
You're breaking up. It sounded like you said $150 ahead.
No.
Good. I was about to kill myself.
It's $250 ahead.
George's eyebrows peak and plummet in shock. He storms into his office.
Get me Nina at work.
She just called.
I need the final head count.
She just gave it to me.
What is it? $150
572.
George closes his eyes and swivels in his chair. Later.
$250 ahead means for the four of us to attend this wedding in our own home will cost $1,000. Therefore, we are not getting up from this table until we cut this list down to the bare minimum. Now invite as many people as you want to the church. Pack them in. Build a grandstand if you want, but we are not having more than 150 people in this house on the day of the wedding. All right, let's start eliminating.
Okay. Jim Pepper and wife.
Oh, great. Start with one of my guys.
Fine. We'll start with one of mine. I'll cut Steve and Stephanie Terrell. They're very good clients of mine.
Say no more
of
their history.
All right, Jim Pepper and wife.
I've known the guy for 20 years.
You haven't seen him in 15, George.
All right, I'll say I lost his address. Now, here's somebody. Your cousin Betsy, the poet, waitress, picture framer.
We can't cut family. They know about the wedding.
I only invited one person. Karen. Mom said I could have a friend there.
For $250, you can see Cameron after the wedding. All right, very good. Five down. We're rolling.
All right, what about Harry Kirby? We haven't seen him in ages.
I don't know.
Didn't Harry Kirby die last year?
Yes! Good!
Annie and Nina gape.
Sorry.
Who's Frank Egelhofer?
What?
He's coordinating the wedding, and then we're not going to invite him?
Exactly. You think I'm going to pay a guy 15% plus an hourly plus an additional $500 to feed him and that assistant of his? Have you lost your mind?
Can I put Karen back on the list if he promises not to eat?
You know, that's not a bad idea. Who else can we ask not to eat? My parents, your mother.
Why don't we just charge people? That way we can make money on the wedding.
Annie
storms upstairs. Nina shoots George an irritated frown.
Was kidding.
Nighttime. In the Banks' living room, a grandfather clock reads 2 a.m. Our view drifts into the shadowy front hall. George walks downstairs in his bathrobe and pajamas. Out of the corner of his eye, he notices Annie asleep on a living room couch. He walks in, rubbing his eyes open. Standing at her side, he bends down and sees an open copy of Bride's magazine resting on her chest. In her left hand, she clutches a yellow highlighting pen. She stirs slightly as he takes the magazine and examines the page she'd been reading.
how to give a beautiful wedding on a small budget. Bake your own wedding cake. Find a good tailor and copy a designer dress. Have a friend take the pictures.
He blinks at the article, then gazes at Annie's cherubic sleeping face. He closes the magazine.
From that moment on, I decided to shut my mouth and go with the flow.
Daytime, in the attic.
My first move was to get the old tuxedo out of mothballs.
George tries to yank up the zipper of skin-tight tuxedo pants. Too short, the pants reach only to his shins, showing 3 inches of his white socks. He sucks in and pulls the zipper up. A bib of white ruffles spreads down the front of his white dress shirt. From another box, he removes a jacket. He slides one arm in. His shirt sleeves stick out far beyond the jacket's cuffs. His other arm gets caught in the remaining sleeve. Arching his back, he jerks his torso to push his arm. With a final shove, it slips through. The jacket strains against his back. As he buttons it, its rear vent splits wide over his rump. He approaches a mirror.
Hey, looking good, my man. Get down. Hey, what's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
With one hand on his abdomen, he swivels his hips and pelvis in a 70s dance.
Whoa, whoa. Hey, Annie, he's up here.
Pussycat, I love you. Indeed, I do. Yes, I do. Hey, what do you think? Bought it at 75 and it still fits.
Like a glove.
Yes. Just, it's a real way to go.
Maybe you could get a new tux. We're all wearing new clothes. And
what, don't you think they look cute? I mean, there will be a lot of single gals there.
I'll get it.
Oh, by the way, good news. The church is free.
Oh, finally, something is free.
I meant available.
George throws up his hands. He peers out a window. Frank and the ponytailed Howard prance up the front walk.
What kind of a night remember Mama touch? Oh, it's very nice. We change it all, though. Let's go.
Frank and his crew had arrived to finalize all the details of the wedding. First was an audition for a band singer.
Oh, Larry. Oh, Cantari. Whoa, 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 whoa. No wonder Annie's happy heart sings. Brian's love has given her wings. Hey, like birds of a feather, a rainbow.
Just as I was about to say, don't call us, we'll call you, I heard.
How it will have to move out all the furniture to have any sort of room.
Oh, this is a nice statement.
George's tuxedo.
Lots of fun.
Mrs. Bomb's fun fun.
Oh. Frank was saying something about moving out the furniture.
We have to move it all out if we're going to fit more than 200 bodies in here.
But what if someone wants to sit down?
We bring in chairs.
Well, if you're bringing in chairs, then why are you moving the furniture out?
Mr. Bonks, I do this for a loving, you know? Trust me. A moving van must take all everything up.
It's an Orthodox van, so sure, yeah.
But Annie, Mrs. Bonks, come this way, please. So, what do you think of the zinger? We do have other choices.
I'd like to see him.
Good, that's no problem.
I can't tell her, everyone. I'm my best friend in the whole world, Hank Jukuninski.
Shoving the haven.
Hi.
Hi. If I could have a moment of your attention to discuss the menu.
The menu. Remind me. The menu, yes.
Unfortunately, Hank didn't speak English, so I will translate.
Frank, that'll be a big help.
It's coffee, tacky, second to the from the chili film, baggage, like that. Never should have a ghost. Make your petite papa. Oh, she fit with the fat.
That was him.
This is what Hunk seduced. For the main crush, he wants to serve well.
Oh, really? I have a problem with that.
With what?
With veal. I keep reading there's a lot of inhumane treatment in the way they treat the calves.
I read that too. You're very chic. No, Val. So, the Dali seafood, which is also cheap, or fowl, which is not cheap, but cheap.
Cheap. Finally, a word I understood. My first and last piece of good news.
Mrs. Banks?
Yes?
One last thing.
A worker drills the ceiling. Plaster dust falls on George.
We need more amps to light the house in the tent. It's cheaper than bringing in a new line.
In terms of the florals out front, we're going to color coordinate with the swans, right?
Swans?
Oh, they'd be wonderful.
Perfect.
We're having swans?
Oh, sure. Frank thought it would be great to have swans waddling around the tulip border. You know, as a guest center, it would be really
Nina, strange. We don't have a tulip border.
You will.
Frank placates Hunk, the caterer.
How much is...
Stop, Hans. We have problem. Hans does not know where want the proper tulip.
He doesn't what?
Frank, does the tent connect through here?
I've been meaning to fix that. You have to push this.
George's jacket splits open.
Oh, now let's not panic about anything. Let's see.
That's only a sub. We can fix that. Now, Mr. Bonks, please, about the soft food. Hank wants to know if it's okay or not okay.
No, Frank. Tell Hank it's not okay. If I have to move out all the furniture and add amps and repaint the walls and get a new tux and pay for swans, then I'd like the chipper chicken. Is that clear?
I understood the chapel part. Yeah.
Mr. Bonks, clack at the cake.
Clack at the cake.
Distraught, Hunk slaps himself with his gloves.
Okay, that's it. Hunk says he will think about this. Now, we do not want to lose him. He is a genius, and we need his mind. Okay? So, let's see what I can do.
Flamins!
Frank scurries after Hunk. Grinning, Howard finds George.
Oh. Yes.
I see you're starting to lose it, but I have one more question. Very minor. I'll say it quickly. Parking attendants. Four is comfortable, three is acceptable. Anything less absolutely terrifies me.
Two.
George?
Two.
Hawk says if you want to file, he wasn't in this. He passes.
He passes?
Brian stumbles in.
Hey, Dad, how's it going? I came to get my sneakers. I left them in Annie's room last night.
I was beginning to feel like I was having an out-of-body experience. I had to get out of the house, and fast.
In his convertible, George tears down the street.
Nina said as long as I was escaping, would I mind escaping to the market and picking up something for dinner? Sure, that was all I needed. A busy supermarket. I needed to drive, mellow out, get my mind off the wedding. But mellowing out was not in the cards.
Still wearing his tux, George rips open packages of hot dog buns in a supermarket.
Excuse me, sir. What are you doing?
I'll tell you what I'm doing. I want to buy 8 hot dogs and 8 hot dog buns to go with them. But no one sells 8 hot dog buns. They only sell 12 hot dog buns. So I end up paying for 4 buns I don't need. So I am removing the superfluous buns.
I'm sorry, sir, but you're going to have to pay for all 12 buns. They're not marked individually.
Yeah. You want to know why? Because some big shot over at the Wiener Company got together with some big shot over at the Bun Company and decided to rip off the American public. Because they...
A balding store manager picks up an intercom.
...nitwits who'll pay for things they don't need rather than make a stink. Well, they're not ripping off this nitwit anymore because I'm not paying for one more thing I don't need. George Banks is saying no!
Who's George Banks?
George's eyes bug out.
Me!
He stalks away.
Why don't we just calm down now, sir? I'll tell you why we don't calm down. Because you're not excited. It takes two people for a we to calm down, doesn't it?
That I don't know, sir. I'm just the assistant manager of a supermarket. But I'll tell you this, if you don't pipe down and pay for those buns, I'm going to call the police.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, right. That's right. Hey, right. Hey, come here.
George races around a corner with his cart. A can rolls gently across the aisle. Later, George lies on a bare cot in a jail cell.
That was the low point. Flipping out over 4 hot dog buns. I couldn't figure out why I'd gotten so nuts, why the wedding had me so unglued.
Banks, your wife is here.
A gray-haired sergeant walks back toward the door.
Aren't you going to let me out?
She wants to talk to you first. She wants to talk to me first?
Annie strolls in with a benevolent smile.
Hello, George.
Why do you look happy to see me in here, Nina?
Happy? No, I'm not happy, George. You think I was happy to tell everyone that I had to come down to the city jail and bail you out for stealing hot dog buns?
I wasn't stealing them. I was happy to...
I'm going to have to ask you not to talk, or I'll have to call Officer What's-His-Name over there. You've been more than I can handle, George. Annie's wedding is not a conspiracy against you. It's just a wedding. People have them every day in every country in the world. I know it's going to be expensive, but we don't go to Europe. We don't own fancy cars. I don't own expensive jewelry, so we can afford to have a big wedding.
Nina.
I'll get you out of here on one condition, Banks, that you agree to the following. Now repeat after me. I, George Stanley Banks.
He grits his teeth and grabs the bars.
I, George Stanley Banks.
Promise to pull it together and act my age.
Promise to pull it together and act my age.
I will stop hyperventilating, rolling my eyes, unbuttoning my top collar button.
I don't unbutton my collar.
Oh, yeah, no. Like, you mean this bit? Mm-hmm.
She yanks her collar.
Stop hyperventilating, rolling my eyes, and unbuttoning my top collar button.
I will stop making faces in general, and I will definitely stop telling everybody I meet how much this wedding is costing.
Don't tell everyone how much it costs.
He told you, right?
$250 a head.
Oh, well, thanks.
The sergeant nods.
I will try to remember my daughter's feelings and how with every roll of my eyes, I am taking away a piece of her happiness.
I love you, Nina.
Just repeat the last part for me, George.
I will try to remember my daughter's feelings.
That's right.
And how, with every roll of my eyes, I'm taking away a piece of her happiness.
I love you, too. Let's go. Okay?
They kiss through the bars. Daytime. George, Annie, Brian, and Maddie play basketball in the Banks' driveway. With Annie and Brian guarding him, George dribbles, passes to Maddie, then lifts him up to the hoop.
Okay, I got you.
Maddie dunks the ball.
Annie! Brian! Look! Your first present! I can't believe it.
Well, our second one should be here any minute.
Wow. How do you know?
Well, my parents are bringing it over.
Oh.
This is when we give the presents? Great. Good. I'll be right back. Where's he going?
Maybe he got a present for you. You know about this? I haven't got a clue.
Inside, George trots downstairs, eagerly clutching a gift-wrapped box to his chest. He glances out the window. Brian's parents hand Annie the keys to a new, shiny red convertible. George winces.
Yikes. Whole car.
He frowns down at his present and hurries into the kitchen. He hides it behind a fruit basket.
Dad, did you see what the Mackenzies got us?
It's unbelievable, and you thought you'd never have a new car.
I know. What's that?
It's nothing. It's just a gift I was thinking of giving you guys. You know, it's something you said you didn't have, but you wanted.
Can I see it?
Yeah, you know, it's not a big, big gift.
He hands it reluctantly to Annie, who smiles as she tears open the wrapping paper.
It's a cappuccino maker.
It's supposed to be a good one. That's what they said at the store. It's top of the line. It makes great foam.
She beams, then places a gentle kiss on his cheek.
I couldn't love anything more.
She picks it up and heads back outside. George watches with a tender, pained smile.
My feelings exactly.
Now, with a knapsack slung over his shoulders, Maddie runs to the Banks' mailbox and pulls out a thick stack of envelopes. Slumped at the dining room table, George frowns as Nina sorts through a stack of reply cards. She drops most of them into a shoebox labeled Accept. A box marked Decline stands empty. George grimaces and unbuttons his collar. When Nina stops and stares, he sighs and rebuttons it. Now, at a men's clothing store, Maddie gets fitted for a tuxedo. A salesman shows one to George, who looks at the price tag.
No.
At home, Nina and Annie put wedding gifts on the dining room table. Annie grimaces at a statue of Venus with a clock in her navel. At the factory.
All right, Mr. Banks, here you go. A 40 long. It's gorgeous even on the hanger. Now, this is an actual Giorgio Armani. The real McCoy. Don't ask how I got it, but here it is.
He slips the jacket onto George. At home, crystal bowls and silver candelabra join the gift pile. Now, Annie tries on a filmy veil at a bridal shop. Now, Nina carries a Thanksgiving turkey to the dining room table. Brian and his parents applaud. At the factory, a worker hands George a pair of white running shoes trimmed in beads and lace. He grins and kisses her on the cheek. Later, he places a silver tea set on the dining room table, which overflows with gifts.
We have great friends, you know that? I mean, these are not your run-of-the-mill salad bowls. These are primo gifts. As a matter of fact, I am so happy we have decided to serve the very chic but expensive seafood that our very posh little wife.
Ah, the beautiful bride! Good news! You have received another lovely, too-good-to-be-true silver tea set.
What's the matter?
Send it back.
Come on. What do you mean?
Daddy, I'm not kidding. Send them all back. The wedding's off.
George and Nina gape as Annie marches upstairs. George follows her. In her room, Annie stares out the window, crying.
Annie?
She wipes tears from her cheeks and drags her feet across the room. Head bowed, she opens the door.
I'm sorry, Dad, but I'm not going to marry Brian.
Okay, okay, whatever you want is okay with us.
I feel so awful after everything you guys have done. And now I have to undo it all.
Don't worry about it. These things get canceled all the time. Your mother and I can take care of everything.
George hugs her close and rubs her back reassuringly.
What happened? Another girl?
She pulls away and wipes her eyes.
I'm looking at your shirt.
Don't worry.
No, it wasn't anything like that. I started out as nothing really. He gave me a present. It's our 8-month anniversary today. He gave me this look.
She climbs onto her bed. George follows her and sits on the edge.
He said it was for me, for our apartment. Look.
George reaches into a gift box, pauses, then lifts out a blender. He narrows his eyes with a puzzled frown.
It's a blender.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I didn't want to act thrown or anything, but inside I was. I mean, I thought something for the apartment, maybe a new clock or a cool phone or a great art book or something, but a blender? I mean, what is this, 1958, to give the little wife a blender? I mean, it scared me, you know, in terms of his expectations. You know, I started to freak out, and he asked me what was wrong, and I asked him what a gift like this is supposed to be telling me, and he said nothing, and I didn't believe him, and we got in this big fight. And he said I was overreacting. And I said, why would I overreact? Nobody in my family overreacts. And then he came up with this totally absurd story, this completely outrageous lie. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking this man's a liar.
What did he lie about?
Oh, actually, it was something about you.
Me?
He said the day that you and Mom went to go visit his folks... I mean, this is so ridiculous. He said that you were snooping around his dad's desk and that you somehow found his dad's bank book. Oh, no, first he said you broke some mirror in their bathroom, and then you found his dad's bank book and you somehow threw it in their pool. I mean, it's too ridiculous. The man lies.
Come in.
Penny Bryan's downstairs.
I don't want to see him.
He looks awful.
Good.
Excuse me. I thought maybe I should help smooth things over. So I took Bryan out for a drink. Thought we could have a talk. Man to man. But as I sat there and listened to his side of the story, I realized this was a golden opportunity. If I ever wanted to get rid of Bryan McKenzie, this was my chance.
You know those banana shakes she likes to make, right? Well, that's why I thought she'd like a blender. I guess I can see your point. I mean, a blender does suggest a certain... These were 1950s reference to sexual politics, but I swear it never entered my consciousness at the time.
I believe you.
You do?
Bryan's eyes light up, hopefully.
Would you tell Annie that for me, Dad?
This was where I was going to lower the boom. But instead, I looked into his weepy eyes and found myself saying,
sure, I'll tell her.
Oh, good.
Bryan drinks a daiquiri.
Because I know whatever you say, she'll believe.
Not only was I not getting rid of the kid, I now found myself talking him into staying.
You know, Bryan, Annie's a very passionate person, and passionate people tend to overreact at times. Annie comes from a long line of major overreactors. Me, I can definitely lose it. My mother, a nut. My grandfather, stories about him were legendary. The good news, however, is that this overreacting tends to get proportionally less by generation. So, your kids could be normal.
Bryan's head droops.
As if that wasn't enough, I went on.
But on the upside, with this passion comes great spirit and individuality, which is probably one of the reasons you love Annie.
That's what I love most about her.
That's when it hit me like a Mack truck. Annie was just like me, and Bryan was just like Nina. They were a perfect match.
At home, George walks into Annie's room with a sheepish grin.
Dad, I can't believe you took him out. What did he say? I mean, you don't have to tell me. What?
Honey, I just spent an hour with Bryan, and believe me when I tell you that this gift says nothing about how he feels about you. It's just a thing to put in the kitchen. He thought you might want to blend something one day, and that's all.
You believe that?
Completely. He's downstairs now. His heart is breaking. Please go see him. And also, that story he told you about me and the bank book in the swimming pool?
Yeah.
George cringes and nods, his hands raised helplessly. Annie gapes.
What?
It's true.
He gestures to the door. Annie runs downstairs.
Oh, Bryan.
Oh, Annie.
He meets her halfway up the stairs. They hug tightly.
I'm so sorry about the blender. And I see your point. It was incredibly insensitive of me.
No, it's okay. I'm on it. It's my first anniversary present. I'm so sorry about calling you a worm. My dad told me.
When I thought I was never going to see you again, if it wasn't for your father.
I know. I love you.
Me too.
George smiles modestly as they start to kiss.
Everything fine now?
Ignoring him, they stroke each other's heads with deep, intense kisses. George rolls his eyes to the ceiling, fidgets, and finally turns away.
Good, I'll just get it.
Embarrassed, George purses his lips and starts up the stairs, then looks back with a weak, sickly smile. He shrugs to himself and trudges to the top with a final peek around the corner. Now, workers swarm around the house, bundled in hats and coats.
Annie!
Hi, Bryan.
Well, we made it to January. It was the day before the big day. The Farmer's Almanac predicted this week was going to be the coldest LA had seen in over half a century. But we were so busy, none of us had time to notice.
Frank oversees the bustle of painters, movers, and gardeners, while three swans waddle across the lawn. The scene dissolves to nighttime. Wearing his pajamas, Maddie paces up and down the upstairs hallway.
together, right together, left together, right together.
George walks out of his room carrying a pair of black patent leather shoes.
I'm out of your perdulate, aren't you?
Yeah, I know. I'm just practicing. I wish I didn't have to walk Mom down the aisle.
Yeah, don't worry. You'll be great.
Is it right together left or left together right?
Well, let's try it. See, we go right together, left together, right together, left together. Good.
Maddie, I'm sorry if I've been preoccupied lately with this wedding.
It's okay.
Yeah, but I have, haven't I?
It's all right. I understand.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, you have. But I haven't felt ignored or anything. Don't worry, Dad. No permanent damage done.
Oh, okay.
They peer in at Annie, who talks on the phone as she packs.
I am really excited. I've got all this packing to do, and this room looks so different.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be weird, isn't it? Just you, me, and Mom here now?
George winces painfully and nods.
Come on.
Good night, pal. Sleep tight.
Good luck tomorrow, Dad.
Yeah, you too.
Annie?
Yeah?
Night.
Night, Maddie. I love you.
I love you too.
George grabs his heart and trudges away. Later, darkness settles over the house. George lies in bed next to Nina, who is sound asleep. Our view trails across her bedside table with framed photos of the kids and a pair of bronzed baby shoes. George stares into space, distractedly rubbing his chin. In a series of flashbacks, we see Annie as a bright-eyed baby, then as a little girl with curly hair tottering downstairs with her lunchbox. As a teenager, she rides down the street on her bike and shoots baskets in the driveway. Wearing a retainer and glasses, she turns and grins, then runs downstairs in a graduation cap and gown. In her return from Italy, she slides down the banister into George's arms. George grows misty-eyed as he remembers Annie throwing her arms around Brian and kissing him. Frowning, George raises his head and glances at an alarm clock, then carefully slips out of bed without waking Nina. He slides his feet into a pair of slippers and pulls on a red plaid robe. Outside, the light on the back porch flicks on. George steps out and buries his hands into his pockets with a shiver. Annie stands in the driveway and shoots baskets. She wears a blue robe over her pajamas and a scarf around her neck. Slowly, George wanders over. He catches a rebound.
Did I wake you?
No, I was up. What are you doing?
Couldn't sleep.
She sinks another shot, then turns and faces him somberly.
I just kept thinking about how this was my last night in my bed, my house. Kind of like my last night as a kid. I mean, I've lived here since I was 5, and I feel like I'm supposed to turn in my key tomorrow. It was so strange packing up my room. You know how you've always trained me never to throw anything away? So, like, I have all these ratty stuffed animals and yearbooks, my old retainer, all my old magic tricks. I've actually packed it all. Just didn't want to let it go. I mean, I know I can't stay. But it's like I don't going to leave.
Well, that's the thing about life is the surprises. The little things that sneak up on you and grab hold of you. It still happens to me.
Snowflakes start to flutter down around them. Their mouths drop open.
What is this?
I don't believe it.
Oh, my God. Talk about surprises.
It hasn't snowed in L.A. since I was 9.
Mom's gonna die.
She sees his forlorn expression.
What? What is that face?
No, nothing. I was just thinking.
No, this is gonna end up costing you more money.
No. Oh, I know I'll remember this moment for the rest of my life.
Annie smiles tenderly and walks into his arms. George holds her close in a tight, lingering hug. The scene dissolves to morning. Two kids dash down the street dragging a toboggan. A thick blanket of snow covers the Banks' lawn and clings to the garlands that frame their windows like delicate lace.
When you live in a city that hasn't seen snow in 36 years, it's bound to cause a few problems. First, we panicked and brought in extra heaters. But they were melting the ice sculptures, so they had to go.
Six men carry heaters into the house, then do an about-face and march back out.
The florist had to thaw out our newly planted tulips with a hairdryer.
She kneels in the snow, drying each bloom by hand.
Frank and Howard shoveled our path themselves at no extra charge.
Just keep shoveling, don't stop.
And the swans spent the morning in a lukewarm bath.
They shake their tail feathers in the bathtub.
Other than that, we were almost running on schedule.
Nina, it's after 3.
All I can say is thank God snow is white and worse. You know what I mean, worse.
Frank, did you have that needle and thread?
Here you go, George. Teach it right off. Howard, you better go to the church. Kabika.
On my way.
Uh-oh, bring the room full of thread. I assume you'll be wearing a block tuxedo.
Oh, it is a block tuxedo.
I don't think so, Bed. This tux is navy blue.
No doubt about that. What are you talking about? Armani doesn't make a blue tuxedo.
Armani don't also make polyester.
George scowls at his sleeve.
Frank, where are the cars? We're supposed to be there by now.
Where are those cars?
All right, relax, honey. Everything's going to be just fine. At least we know they can't start without us.
I knew I'd never be able to remember what Nina wore that day. But I also knew I'd never forget the way she looked.
George gazes at her. She wears an elegant, sparkling, cream-colored suit.
Nina.
Thank you, George.
You shouldn't look this beautiful. It's not fair to the bride.
Cars is here. Huh? Matthew, Front, and Sander.
Maddie appears on the landing, wearing a tux. He starts to slide down the flower-covered banister.
Just kidding.
Oh, no.
What did you do to your hair, honey?
I killed it. You don't like it?
No. I think it looks cool.
Very debonair, my boy.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll go in the first car and you and Annie follow.
Right.
George.
Oh, I follow. Anne!
Flustered, George checks his watch and charges up the stairs.
Annie?
Ready, come on in.
He opens the door. Annie beams at him, glowing in a lace-trimmed satin wedding dress and long, filmy veil.
You look beautiful.
Thanks. Okay, let's get this show on the road.
She lifts the hem of her skirt and shows off her lacy white running shoes. George grins. Later, bright sunshine beams down from a turquoise sky, melting the snow on the pavement. A black stretch limousine pulls up to the curb in front of a small white chapel. George and Annie hop out and dash inside. In the church foyer, Nina rushes over to greet Annie, along with Annie's bridesmaids and the tuxedoed ushers. George pulls Maddie aside.
Left together, right together.
Got it, Dad. See?
Ink letters on Maddie's palm read, left together, right together.
mother of the bride, mother of the bride. Gotta go.
George.
Nina gives George a strong, encouraging kiss.
Mother of the bride. Come on, mother of the bride. Here we go. I'm opening the doors. Natasha, haven't you peeked enough? Here we go. Come on, let's go.
Howard opens the sanctuary doors with a dramatic flourish. George peeks in. Flowers and candles decorate every pew in the church. The ushers and bridesmaids line up in pairs.
And left, right, very nice. Smile.
Nina and Maddie start the procession, walking slowly down the aisle, hand in hand. They beam at the smiling guests as they pass. At the back of the line, George peeks in at them, then gulps nervously.
Right and left. Right and very nice and...
Howard sends in the other couples, who wear tuxedos and long pink gowns. Inside, Brian steps up to the altar and faces out toward the procession. Taking slow, ceremonious steps, the couples split and line up on either side of the altar. In the foyer, Howard kneels in front of the two young flower girls to straighten their white dresses. George and Annie step up to the entrance.
This was the moment I'd been dreading for the past 6 months. Well, actually, for the past 22 years.
Annie smiles up at him. He nods. As the flower girls scatter petals down the aisle, Howard fusses with Annie's veil and train. George steps forward. Annie holds him back.
Hold on, Dad.
Annie overwhelmed me. She was as calm and cool as I'd ever seen her. Very un-Banks-like.
The flower girls reach the altar.
Okay.
Everyone rises to their feet as George and Annie start up the aisle. Brian takes a deep, nervous breath. With Annie on his arm, George nods stiffly to the smiling guests as he passes. Annie, carrying a bouquet of white roses, beams from behind her veil. In the front pew, Nina helps Maddie up for a better view. Brian grins as George and Annie reach the altar. George hesitates, then reluctantly lets go of Annie's arm and hands her over to Brian, who takes her hand. The minister motions for everyone to sit.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here together in the presence of family, friends, and loved ones for the purpose of uniting in matrimony.
All I could think of was the part I had to play. Then suddenly I went blank. I had one line and I couldn't remember it. When the Reverend said, "Who presents this woman?" was I supposed to say, "That's me?" Or was it, "I do?" I couldn't think. I felt every eye in the place boring into the back of my neck, waiting for me to screw up, when suddenly, it was upon me.
Who presents this woman in holy matrimony?
I do.
Bowing his head, George slips into the pew beside Nina.
Annie and Brian, you have come here today to join your hands.
Who presents this woman? This woman.
This vow of marriage is most solemn.
But she's not a woman, she's just a kid. And she's leaving us.
With a deep realization of its obligations and responsibilities.
I realized at that moment that I was never going to come home again and see Annie at the top of the stairs. Never going to see her again at our breakfast table in her nightgown and socks. I suddenly realized what was happening. Annie was all grown up and leaving us. And something inside began to hurt.
He reaches down and takes Nina's gloved hand.
I, Brian McKenzie.
I, Brian McKenzie.
Take thee, Annie Banks.
Take thee, Annie Banks.
To be my wedded wife.
To be my wedded wife.
To love and to comfort from this day forward.
To love and to comfort from this day forward.
I, Annie Banks.
I, Annie Banks.
Take thee, Brian McKenzie.
Take thee, Brian McKenzie.
To be my lawful wedded husband.
To be my lawful wedded husband.
To love and to comfort from this day forward.
To love and to comfort from this day forward.
The ring, please.
Smiling, Nina shakes her head in wonder, then bites her lip cheerfully and looks down.
With this ring, as a token of my love and affection, I thee wed.
With this ring, as a token of my love and affection, I thee wed.
Brian slips a gold band onto her finger. Joanna Mackenzie gives a hanky to her weeping husband. George tightens his hold on Nina's hand.
With this ring, as a token of my love and affection, I thee wed.
With this ring, as a token of my love and affection, I thee wed.
Annie puts a ring on Brian's finger.
By virtue of the authority vested in me, I now pronounce you husband and wife. Give me a kiss, the bride.
Brian lifts Annie's veil. Their lips meet in a tender kiss. Nina smiles through her tears. Her head collapses onto George's shoulder in relief. George smiles sadly. Everyone leaps to their feet as Brian and Annie step down from the altar hand in hand. She pauses in front of George with a soft, loving smile, then continues down the aisle with her new husband. George bows his head and turns away.
Well, she did it. And now, as my son said, it was time to part.
Brian and Annie run through a cloud of confetti to their limo. Later, at the house.
The house was busting at the seams. Everywhere I looked, there were faces, most of which, I might add, I'd never seen before.
George, I'd like you to meet the Danish relatives.
Hello!
I met Brian's Danish relatives, who thanked me profusely for flying them over.
A huge red-haired woman gives George a bone-crushing hug. She lifts him off his feet and bounces him up and down.
Everyone was telling me what a great party it was. How beautiful the house looked. They loved the flowers, the hors d'oeuvres, the swans. We even seemed to be getting away with only two parking attendants. Everything was running smoothly except for one small detail. I still hadn't kissed the bride.
George goes to the window. Brian and Annie stand outside, posing for the photographer. George tries to open the back door, which is locked.
Sorry, sir, all traffic has to go through the front door.
He scowls, then reaches for a passing hors d'oeuvre tray.
Oh, I have one of those. Sorry, just sold my last one. Hey, a button. It's navy. This must be yours.
George pouts.
We're moving into the tent now. Dinner is served. This way to the tent, please.
George hurries back to the window, just as Brian and Annie walk away.
Annie!
Frustrated, he turns away from the window and stops short. The dinner line stretches into the next room.
It was unbelievable. I had never seen a line form so fast. It was as if they knew what the food was costing me.
Later, the last guests go through the line.
Finally, I made it into the tent.
The tent glows with elegant candlelight and twinkling garlands of roses. Waiters move from table to table.
I was ready to relax and taste the food I'd been hearing about for the past 5 months when...
There's some cops out front and they want to talk to you.
Cops?
I've heard we'll handle this together. I got George for on the way.
Wearing a radio headset, Frank grabs the plate out of George's hands and hustles him out the front door.
Let me handle this, George. Give me your wallet.
Lights flashing, a squad car sits on the street, which is jammed with cars.
See, Cameron, I told you. Wow.
Maddie and Cameron tag along.
This your house?
Me?
Yeah, you in the blue tux.
George rolls his eyes.
Yes, yes, it is. Do you have a permit for parking 200 cars in this street?
Well, the problem is, officer, that we are supposed to have 4 parking attendants. But 2 got the flu.
Well, you better get all these cars off this street before the fire marshal gets here.
Fine, fine. Any suggestions what we do then?
I don't care what you do with them. Just have them off this street within the next 30 minutes.
We'll do, sir. We'll take care of it. You're not to worry, okay? George, you need me inside. The big moment. The keg is being wheeled out.
I'll handle it.
I'm on my way.
Where are we going to get a couple extra drivers?
He looks down at Maddie and his friend Cameron, who grin.
Hey, baby, I'm your man.
Now, craning his neck to see over the steering wheel, a grinning Maddie drives a sedan. With jerky stops and starts, he parks on his front lawn. George parks a Mercedes coupe, then directs Cameron into a space and almost gets run over. Cameron stops just in time and climbs out of the car. George gives him an agitated thumbs up.
By the way, great wedding, Mr. Banks. And don't worry, I didn't need anything.
That makes two of us.
In the tent, Annie cranes her neck, searching the crowd of dancing guests. She approaches Nina.
Where is he? I don't know.
Outside, George stands alone amid a sea of parked cars, staring at his house with a miserable frown. He fiddles with the keys in his hand, leans wearily on a roof, and surveys the parking lot his lawn has become.
What can make me feel this way? It's my girl.
I will feel a glow just thinking of.
Later, George comes back into the house where the guests mingle with their dessert and coffee. He pauses at the entrance of the tent with a pensive smile. Annie stands with her bridesmaids, who gather around to admire her ring.
Oh, but you're lovely.
He wanders further into the tent and catches sight of Nina, smiling radiantly and laughing with a group of women. George smiles to himself as Maddie asks one of the flower girls to dance.
But to love you just the way you look tonight.
George chuckles. His smile turns wistful as he sees Brian pull Annie into his arms to dance.
Just the way you look tonight.
Well, I had to admit the wedding appeared to be a complete success. Now all I needed to make me happy was a dance with the bride.
Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few moments, Mrs. Annie Banks McKenzie will be tossing a bouquet in the foyer, and then she's off to Hawaii.
This I was not going to miss. The mob was headed through the living room, so I decided to take a shortcut.
Fighting against the crowd, George makes his way toward the back of the tent. He jogs outside, hops over a swan, and skates down the slick, slushy front walk.
Whoa!
Inside, Annie and Brian appear at the top of the stairs. Wearing a cream-colored suit, Annie carries a small pink bouquet. Nina beams up at them.
Where's my dad?
I don't know. I haven't seen him.
Now, George zigzags his way through the kitchen, dodging chefs, waiters, and an irate honk. He squeezes through and jogs upstairs.
Should I throw it?
Annie turns, covers her eyes, and tosses the bouquet. Nina's smile fades.
You missed it.
Brian and Annie trot downstairs and head for the door amid a shower of streamers and confetti. George appears at the top of the stairs just as they get swallowed up by the crowd. He joins the throng of guests that push outside to see them off. Hands in his pockets, his hopeful smile fades as they disappear into their limousine.
Bye!
Bye.
Thanks!
Bye.
Have fun.
She was gone. My Annie was gone, and I was too late to say goodbye.
Blinking, George watches the limo drive away. He bows his head and swallows hard, then follows the crowd as it trickles back into the house. The scene dissolves to later that night. The yard is empty.
When the last guest was gone and the last glass of champagne had been drunk, we surveyed the damage.
In the living room, George and Nina collapse into chairs. Confetti litters the floor. Plates of cake and cups of coffee lie strewn around the room.
It's funny how empty a house can suddenly get, isn't it?
Sorry you didn't get a chance to say goodbye to her, George.
Oh, that's all right.
But you know, I think she's going to be really happy.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
George wanders to the stereo and drops in a cassette.
Hello.
Dad?
Hi. Where are you?
At the airport. Our plane's about to take off, but I couldn't leave without saying goodbye.
Thank Mom for everything, okay?
Dad, I love you. I love you very much.
I love you too, sweetheart. Thanks for calling. And have a great honeymoon.
Thanks, I will. Bye.
George grins at the phone. At the airport, Brian holds out his hand. Annie takes it with a sigh and a happy smile.
When the world is cold,
that was Annie.
I will feel the glow just thinking of you. And the way you look tonight.
Nina walks to George in her stocking feet and puts her arms around him. In the deserted living room, they start to dance.
Oh, but your love, with your smile so warm.
Our view pulls back into the softly lit tent, strewn with empty glasses and crumpled napkins. Framed in the doorway, George and Nina sway back and forth, holding each other close.
Just the way.
Hanging lights surround them like sprinkled stars. In graceful looping script, a title reads, The End. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Nancy Baker and Leslie Wu Foley. Descriptions read by Margot Stage. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. Credits roll. Associate producer, Bruce A. Block. Unit production manager, Paul Deason. First assistant director, Casey Caldwell. Second assistant director, Bruce Carter. Set decorator, Cynthia McCormick. Art director, Aaron Cummins. Cast, Steve Martin as George Banks. Diane Keaton as Nina Banks. Kimberly Williams as Annie Banks. Kieran Culkin as Maddie Banks. George Newbern as Brian McKenzie. Martin Short as Frank Egelhofer. B.D. Wong as Howard Weinstein. Peter Michael Goetz as John McKenzie. Kate McGregor Stewart as Joanna McKenzie. And in order of appearance, Carmen Hayward as Grace. April Ortiz as Olivia. Mina Vasquez as Marta. Gibby Brand as David. Richard Portnow as Al, the tuck salesman. Barbara Perry as the female factory worker. Martha Gaiman as Andrea the florist. Frank Kopick as Dan the field engineer. David Pasquese as Honk the caterer. Ira Hyden as the stock boy. Thomas Wagner as the police officer. Hallie and Annie Myers-Shire as the flower girls. Morgan Docks, Alyssa Mandel, Christine Beliveau, and Natasha Wieland as the bridesmaids. Eric Kay, Scott Hogan, Peter Cooper, and David Day as the ushers. Ed Williams as the reverend. Patricia and Irving Myers as guests at the reception. Bruce Block as the photographer. Peter Murnick as the patrolman. Chauncey Lepardi as Cameron. Steve Tyrell as the band leader. Special appearance by Eugene Levy and Tom Irish as Ben Banks. Based on the novel Father of the Bride by Edward Streeter. The producers wish to thank Spode. Songs: My Girl, written by William Robinson and Ronald White, performed by The Temptations. Minuet and Baudinary by Bach, performed by the New Leipzig Bach Collegium Musicum. What's New Pussycat, written by Bert Bacharach and Hal David. Nel Blu Dipinto di Blu and Volare, written by Domenico Modugno and Franco Migliacci. Chapel of Love, written by Phil Spector, Ellie Greenwich, and Jeff Barry, performed by the Dixie Cups. Perfect Match, written by Steve Tyrell and Bob Mann. Isn't It Romantic, written by Richard Rogers and Lawrence Hart. Today I Met the Boy I'm Going to Marry, written by Phil Spector, Ellie Greenwich, and Tony Powers, performed by Darlene Love. I'm Your Man, written by Steve Tyrell and Charles Shires, performed by David Darling. My Girl, written by William Robinson and Ronald White, performed by Steve Tyrell. Beyond the Sea, written by Charles Trenet and Jack Lawrence. The Way You Look Tonight, written by Jerome Kern and Dorothy Fields, performed by Steve Tyrell. original score soundtrack, available on Varese Saraband Records. Copyright 1991, Touchstone Pictures. All rights reserved. Produced in association with Sand Dollar Productions. Distributed by Buena Vista Pictures Distribution, Incorporated. Now, a logo appears. A bolt of lightning zigzags through a sliding blue sphere. Touchstone Pictures.
All right, everybody.